recorded those birds in a school playground. Pretty cool, huh? This is episode 24 of Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, and I'm your host, Steve Mileto. And today I'm talking with Mrs. Tanya Hare, a first grade teacher at Pulaski County Elementary School in Hawkinsville, Georgia. We had a great conversation discussing personalizing instruction, using groups, formative assessment, and using mini whiteboards. By the way, don't forget to share this with your friends and colleagues, and stop by iTunes while you're at it and leave us a review or a star rating. Thanks for listening, and enjoy.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, Steve here again with Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. And today I have with me Mrs. Hare from, she's a first grade teacher at Pulaski County Elementary School. Her name's Tanya. Say hi, Tanya.
Hi, listeners.
Thanks for joining us today. And oh, by the way, before we get going, I just want to let everyone know that I visited her classroom, and there's an opportunity in here where I may mention some kids' names. If I do, just know that I've changed those names of the children so that they're not the real names. All right, with that being said, Tanya, what I'd like you to do is let's start first with you telling us a little bit about who you are and your background.
My name is Tanya Hare. I teach at Pulaski County Elementary School. I am from Hawkinsville, so this is actually the elementary school I went to as a little girl. This is my 11th year. And this is my second year in first grade, but I have previously taught pre-K, second grade, and fifth grade. I also was the intervention specialist for kindergarten through eighth grade for a couple of years, so I had experience working with kindergartners through eighth graders.
Now, I got to say something because I caught myself. That's cool. You went here, too.
Yes.
Now, that's awesome. Okay, so I got to ask this question. So does that mean that you're working with anybody who was a teacher when you were here?
Absolutely. Some of them are retired. Some of them are still here.
Okay. Now, that is wild. I cannot imagine what that would be like. That's cool. Well, let's talk about my visit to your classroom. I had the pleasure of watching you work with class recently, and one of the first aspects of your teaching that is so noticeable is that you have routines and practices in place. And what I'd like you to do is talk about some of these routines. And, for example, like some of the things that I saw is the kids working in groups. They had small groups, a little bigger groups. They knew where they were supposed to sit and gather as a group. You had these math tubs. You had these different color coatings and so forth going on. Tell me a little bit about those.
Well, it does take a lot of time getting those things prepared and ready for the students. And we spend a lot of time practicing and practicing and practicing in the beginning. Because if you set up those routines in the beginning for little ones, and then it's not as hard for them as the year goes on, and then things should run automatically like they're supposed to. Organization and planning are key to being successful, as well as learning from your mistakes and what works and what doesn't work and what you need to change from year to year. I spend a lot of time thinking and reflecting on my students' ability levels, their personalities, who's quiet, who's loud. You don't want too loud children in the same group kind of thing. I think about who works well together and who is a natural leader and who is receptive to receiving help. Some children, you know, prefer to work independently. So, you know, it takes a lot of thought process to see what's going to make a group work. And as I said before, we practice getting up out of our chair and walking to a station and then walking back before we ever even, you know, do any learning centers or stations in the beginning of the year. So it's all about every little thing that we do. There is a specific procedure for those children. Also, I group my children heterogeneously when they are at their home seats, which I call like their little neighborhood seats that they have their materials at. And when they are working in math tubs or they're working in reading stations, they have various ability levels and who works well together. When I pull for small groups, they are homogeneously grouped, and those groups are based on formative assessments that I have done in the classroom to see, and those are constantly changing groups as I see it fits their needs. And also, as far as the tubs, I never give them an activity in the tub that we have not previously done together. It should not be something that they have to ask me questions about. They should feel very comfortable with the activity, and it should be something they should do independently where they don't have to interrupt me in small group to ask me how to do the activity.
One of the things that I want to point out is that I work oftentimes with teachers who struggle with classroom management, and one of the things they lack is that understanding that you just can't start and think the kids are off, and it doesn't matter what age they are. You need to practice. You need to teach them what those routines and practices are, and you need to do them. And it takes time, and then eventually it becomes normal and natural for them. And you just described that, and it was obvious that day because the kids just knew what you're expecting of them, move between the places, the transition. There's no downtime in transitions, and it's awesome. And that practicing comes through loud and clear. Speaking of which, without this loss of time and so forth, and you just talked about that practicing and so forth, during the middle of this, I got to tell you, at one point you said something about, all right, deer antlers. Okay, the kids knew exactly what you were talking about and responded. So can you tell me what deer antlers are?
Well, we do live in the South, and we have a lot of deer hunters. So particularly for my little boys, that resonates with them. You know, the deer in the headlights, what a deer looks like when it stopped. That means you stop, eyes are on me. And when their hands are on top of their head, they are not fidgeting with math manipulatives. They're not playing with their pencil. They're not digging in their desk. I can see all 10 fingers, and I know their eyes are looking at me, and they're on task, you know, and ready.
Very nice. And it worked, too. That's what was so cool. You said that, and boom, and they're just focused. And that's one of those tools of management that stops you from having to be a disciplinarian. You're able to manage their behaviors, and they respond. And obviously, I'm guessing that fits right in with what you talked about, that you had to practice deer antlers at some point.
Right, we did.
And there definitely are lots of deer around, and there's no way that they could not know what deer were. The focus during class that day was you had this happening, problem solving, showing numbers in different ways, and you had an opening activity, and I'm just going to read a little bit from that. Gary and Jill both want 23 stickers for a class project. There are 3 sheets of 10 stickers and 30 single stickers on the table. How would Gary and Jill each take 23 stickers? Show 2 different ways. So what I want to talk about is, what's the purpose of starting with an activity like this? What does it help you learn about your kids, and you know, where they are or their understanding of the content? Is that what you're trying to do? So can you talk a little bit about it?
Yes. We have been practicing all year different ways to show and represent a number. Particularly with that activity, we had been talking about tens and ones. And for example, for the number 23, that 2 tens and 3 ones equal the same thing as 1 10 and 13 ones. So introducing an activity like that, it was a higher order thinking skill. So it did challenge my uppers, but it could tell, even if they didn't quite have it, I could see where they were going with that. You know, seeing, well, do they understand the concept of base 10? Are they just sitting there, you know, drawing out 23 circles? Are they, do they have any number knowledge or number sense of what a, you know, a group of 10 is? And I also wanted to see if they remembered, you know, writing it as a digit, being able to write it as a number word, or, you know, show it to me in some other way, because there's various ways. I've even introduced talking to them using the term expanded form instead of just a number sentence. I know it's coming up for them, so I wanted to see, is there somebody that maybe is going to show me this number as the number sentence, instead of, you know, using the blocks or drawing the, you know, the rods and the little cubes. So it was really to challenge my uppers, and then just to see where my lower students, where they could start, you know, where was their brain at when I gave them that? Where are we going, and where do we need to go?
One of the things that I want to talk about now is that you use groups, and you have them color-coded, unidentified, and you've mentioned a lot of this right now. And some of the grouping especially aligns with the students and their progress or needs, which you've alluded to. Talk about your success and work with the kids in groups. And this eventually is going to lead us to talking about a chart that you create while you're walking around. But can you go ahead and just talk about, you know, first of all, kind of how you use the groups, and then what it helps you with in helping and working with the kids?
For one thing, I find that using groups it engages students. They enjoy working together, and oftentimes I feel that they can better explain things to one another on a more appropriate maturity level than I can even, you know, get to them. So they enjoy it. It gives me a time that I can walk around and I can pull students individually, or I can pull a little small group of students I know are struggling with the same skill. It gives me time away that I can help them while, you know, my other students are helping other struggling students. I often, this is just a little management thing, I use my little teachers, aka my bossy children, with my struggling students, because those children, they want to help.
Right.
And a lot of my struggling students, they want to be helped. So that's a good pairing, a good personality match. And that loosens my hands a little bit so I can, you know, help others that need help. And sometimes, you know, when they're working in groups, it's not as embarrassing to work with a neighbor or a friend as it is to always have to ask the teacher for help. I mean, we have that relationship where they can, but for some of them, it is embarrassing to constantly have to ask the teacher. So by giving them a study buddy or working in a group, it's a way they can get help where they're not always dependent solely on me as the teacher to help them. And as far as developing my small groups, I think I stated before that I use the formative assessments, you know, walking around the room, looking and seeing what they're doing in activities, seeing how they're performing on the formative assessments I give them. That tells me who I need to pull for this particular skill. Right. They're struggling with this. So they do change, you know, as needed.
And that's what I thought was very impressive about what you were doing, because you have, I'm going to transition into a question about the chart, because one of the things that you do is you've created a chart that allows you to put down information about what you're seeing. And so it's right in line with what, you know, in using formative assessment in, as the kids are doing the activities, you have a chart that you've made that has each kid's name. And then you have a category in there that says, meets or, what's the middle, partially meets and, does not meet, and then you have a place for your comments. And one of the things that I saw you doing is that you're looking at what they're doing, and you're writing comments in this, which then lends itself to you being able to remember that somebody's not getting it. You know, and this is an aspect of formative assessment that sometimes I've seen colleagues not get, which is it's not just about you watching, but it's also about you remembering that there's action that you need to take as a result of kids who, well, at all levels, the ones who are getting it, well, we got to keep pushing them forward. And the ones who aren't, what is it, you know, is it that they're really not getting it, or is it that just today they're a little off task or something? So can you talk about the chart and about using that in the grouping and so forth?
Yes, and I'm glad you pointed that out, because a lot of times, you know, with the three categories, with the meets, the partially meets, or the does not meet, that middle category, that's why we have the teacher comment sign, is why didn't they meet it that day? For some kids, it might just be a careless mistake. You know, they got three out of the four right, but it's because, you know, they said 6 + 1 = 5 instead of that, they subtract instead of added, but they really, for the most part, got the skill. So I can make a little note, okay, they've got it, they just made a little careless mistake. Or I can go in there and say, you know, I only see this, nobody looks at this, you know, I might put no clue, like, oh, we need to start from ground zero on right. This one, you know, we don't even know where to get started. And it also gives me good data when I'm sitting down, if I'm, you know, meeting with a parent, and if it's the same particular student or students that continually, you know, are struggling, it's a way I can cover up the names and show, I mean, this is where we're struggling, and you see kind of where they're compared with peers. And a lot of times when you're meeting with the parents, they're a lot more receptive. It's, you know, when they're looking at hardline data instead of, you know, oh, well, he's getting it, or it's a maturity, you know, well, when right. They're compared, this is where, you know, we are with our peers, and it, you know, it's a little more eye opening. Or the swing side, you can see who's really shining. I mean, if they are meeting in everything that you are doing, then perhaps that child needs to be challenged.
Right,
you know,
could be boring them to tears.
Right, so. Right.
And that's what I like about what you're doing, is that it shows that what you're doing is you're taking this information and you're using it. you're paying attention to, you know, what the different levels are. You know, you're personalizing instruction in the classroom, and that's a very important aspect of formative assessment, which is that it's not just about, you know, you get this information. Well, the big part of it is you get this information, so now what do you do with it? And the only way you can remember the information is if you've created something like that where you can keep track of it, instead of just trusting the fact that the idea that you're going to remember, even though you've got a whole bunch of class time happening, and then somebody may come to your door after class, and it may be a while before you actually get to sit down and reflect on what you learned. So thank you. That's awesome. Now, during the same class, I watched you use mini whiteboards, and I love mini whiteboards. I love the opportunity for kids to write and demonstrate right there at the desk, because, you know, usually kids of all ages, I don't care if they're seniors in high school or if they're kindergartners, they want to be able to write on the board. And even though today we have magic, you know, we have magic markers, that's good. Yeah, ruin the board. We have the dry erase markers and stuff like that. You know, in my day it was chalk. You know, kids want to be able to, you know, be engaged and use the markers and write on the boards. And so you had the kids using these mini whiteboards. And what I'd like you to do is tell me how you use these to engage the kids and to help you with formative assessment. And once again, understanding where the kids are individually.
Yes. As you said, my kids, they love dry erase boards. If we get those out with markers, you have automatic engagement. I mean, they're pumped about whatever you're fixing to do. As a way of formative assessment, my number one clue, if I ask them to do something, they're not writing as much as they like to write on there, like, there's a problem. You know, I know that they're stuck. If they're not writing on it, or they're just kind of doodling, and, okay, they don't know what to write. You know, they're right. Having a hard time. It's also like a quick assessment that if I give them a problem, okay, write the answer, hold it for me to see. And they're not really focused on their neighbors as much as showing me what they have. Okay, hurry up, erase it, and let's do another one. So it's a quick check for me to get an eye of what's going on. And like I said, I mean, first graders, we love to write on them. So anytime I get them out, I automatically have them tuned in to me and what we're fixing to do. Because if they get to draw something on there, they're excited about it. As a matter of fact, we put that as part of our school supply list this year, was each child had to bring in 2 dry erase markers, and I label them with their names. They are responsible for their marker. So if it dries out and your name's on the marker, it's your, you know, responsibility. But my little table groups, I call them their neighborhoods. In each little neighborhood, they have a tub, and they have their own whiteboard and their dry erase marker in there, and some math manipulatives that little neighborhood they share, and they're responsible for keeping up with those materials, and they do a great job.
Very nice. And just as a note, there's one of those routines and practices sneaking back into this, where they have the neighborhood, and you teach them how to be in that neighborhood. And I like that. That's awesome. It was neat watching them use the boards, and you know, the kids were just focused on they were very engaged. And I really like what you said just a second ago, which was the idea that they are they're providing you information. Because it's them and the board, and so they're demonstrating, or they're showing you right there. And I think that's, you know, that to me, that's one of the really great aspect of using mini whiteboards in a classroom, is that, you know, they're excited about doing it, but they're, as you're watching, you're seeing them even kind of go through the mental processes of what they need to write or draw or whatever. So that was exciting. So let's kind of shift gears here for a minute, and let's leave the practices that I actually saw you using, and let's talk a little bit about if you were able to have something for your classes to assist with their understanding and learning, and cost was no issue, what would you want to have in your class?
A pair pro, for one.
Ah, yes. Hey.
Another set of hands is always nice, but really, I really do wish we had more peer pros, more parent volunteers available, because children, they do need as much one-on-one attention or small group attention as they can get. So if we had plenty on, you know, budget, that would be nice. Seriously, I had to teach third grade just for 9 weeks for one of our teachers that was, you know, out for some illness for some time. And she had a small set of laptops. So they had regular desktop computers in there, and then they had a set of like 6 laptops. And those kids, I mean, loved them. They were so engaged, and you could have basically 2 computer stations where they could be using technology. So man, if I could get six, it would be nice. If I had a class set, that would be really nice. I don't know. I mean, I would be curious because my first graders, they love the desktop computers, and I think that would be very engaging for them. They can handle the smart board. For the most part, they can get and log on the computer. So if you find us some money, I would like a set of laptops.
Okay. I'll be sharing this with people. So, who knows what the genie might make happen.
That's
so
right.
That's awesome. Thank you. And by the way, and your first note is definitely on the recording, a ParaPro. And I like that too. So while we're talking about resources, do you have a favorite resource that you like to use with the kids? And if so, what is it? And talk about why you like to use it.
Hands down, my favorite, I don't even know how I taught without it, resource is having a smart board in my classroom.
Very cool.
It has, oh my gosh, so many uses. I love it. My kids love it. We play lots of interactive educational games on there. We take virtual field trips. Our children, for the most part here, or, you know, come from a low socioeconomic background. I mean, we have kids that we live right next to Florida, but they've never seen the beach. So to be able to show them that, or, you know, we went on a virtual trip to the Atlanta Zoo when we were talking about animals for science, you know, so to be able to really see some of the animals they might not ever see, you know, live, being Excellent. Able to do that. And it's so engaging for them because, like I said before, they can work it. I mean, there's a lot of times I go up there and all of our charts from our reading series and what we do in math, they are all available where I can put it up on the smart board so they can follow along with me. Or if there's a chart, they can actually come up there and circle things or, you know, work an addition problem or, you know, what have you. But they love it and I love it, and I think everybody should have one.
Very nice. Very nice. So just a reminder to all those listening from this county that good job.
Yes. We all, I think, enjoy our smart boards.
Very nice. If you were given a chance to speak with a class of 30 brand new elementary teachers, so think about it. You're talking to people who are brand new. They're either getting ready to graduate or they just graduated and are just trying to get those jobs. What instructional or classroom advice would you want them to remember the most? Something that you would share with them?
Well, I would say to always be prepared and organized and forward thinking in your planning. With that in mind, you can plan, but at the same time, you need to be willing to be flexible, especially when you're working with young children.
Yes.
Because I'm constantly thinking, I guess, when I'm planning, well, what could go wrong? What's going to be hard for them? I know that sounds terrible to be always thinking about what goes wrong, but it helps. You know, are these two going to fight if everybody doesn't have red in this group? You know, things, we want to try to avoid catastrophe before it ever gets started. So if you can think about things that might fail in your planning and go ahead and steer the other way, that's always helpful.
And just a note, I got to interrupt you there because that's something that you learn from the experience, that you better be prepared for something to fail. And what do I do next? Because sometimes there's any number of things that can happen. And I taught at high school level, and high schoolers, they'll, you know, it's the same sort of thing. You're going, well, that's not working. And what am I going to do next? And if you don't have a next, if you don't have a plan B, then you better be good at tap dancing because that's going to be a rough class.
Yes, absolutely. There's nothing worse than, planning a web quest and then all of a sudden, you know, the internet's down for the day and your principal walks in to, you know, observe you. So,
yes.
Welcome to teaching. But no, I mean, really, I know it takes a lot of time in the beginning to organize and get your thoughts together, but anything, especially with young children, that you can label to, you know, for them to have their own materials so that they're not fussing over things. I buy those color dots. I swear I could, like, you know, somebody could retire for as many of those things. But you want them to be independent. Like, if you take the time to prepare the games, I'll put, you know, the little dot stickers. If they have number cards, then I might put a red dot on all the number cards and they go in the red dot bag. And then somebody else has a blue dot. So if they're working in, say, a math tab, there's four different colors. So when it comes time and all the cards are jumbled up, all they have to do is look, you know, they've got a green dot bag, they look for the green dot cards. You know, you want to make them as self-sufficient as you can be. as they can be, rather. You know, you have enough going on and trying to meet their needs than to try to worry about separate materials. So take the time to plan. Take the time to organize. It makes it a lot easier in the long run if that is done. So I'm a little type A too. So lots of my things are color coded and labeled, and my kids know that too. It's a little embarrassing sometimes. I've actually had my kids, you know, in a listening center one time, my pillows, my little girls, like, they knew it is stripe, it is polka dot, and it is solid. That is the way Miss Hare puts her pillows. I mean, they know me. I mean, and you teach them how to do it, and they'll do exactly what you want it to do.
That's awesome. And by the way, it is not that there's anything wrong with that, to steal a line from a TV show, but the it is very noticeable in your classroom that you have things like that, which is an awesome thing, because what you're doing, though, is you're teaching them organizational skills, and that this is how I'm doing it. And just like you said with other things, they pick up those practices and they realize that some of these things need to be. Although I think I still would be unorganized, but it is very noticeable. That's cool. That's neat about the green dots and the little dots.
And so. Well, I started really when our reading series, all the workbooks were all red. Well, and when you have 6 and 7 year olds trying to get out a red workbook, and there's 4 of them in their desk, you know, we finally learned you get out the green dot book, the red dot book, the blue dot book. So, you know, they understand that the green dot's the grammar book. You know, they get used to that when everything's the same color in there. But, you know, whatever works. They stickers and color coding seem to work for first graders. So that's what helps me keep a little bit of my sanity.
Well, excellent. And that's, you know, that's awesome advice to new teachers, because I think a lot of times, just like with anything, it's easy to watch somebody who has been teaching for a while go through routines and practices and think, oh, I can do that. And what they don't realize is the amount of time that you spent maybe in practice, learning from the things that didn't work.
Absolutely.
And practicing and creating new activities and so forth to find the things that do work. In our world, it's like that in lots of things. People can make something look easy, but it's really not, and it takes some time, and it takes developing those routines and practices and practicing those, like you've talked about earlier. And I think what you're talking about is just awesome advice for a brand new teacher. In closing, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think about when you were in school, K through 12, did you have any one teacher that you would thank if you could, and what would you say?
Well, I was fortunate to have several wonderful teachers. I mean, I really can't think of it. I know this is, you think I'm telling a story, but I really, all of my teachers, I really did enjoy school. But my favorite teacher was my third grade teacher, Miss Sheffield. And I just remember her, she always just made me feel like really special, and like she took time with me if I ever needed it. And I know she did it with all of us, but it didn't feel that way to me. You know, to me, it was like, oh, she's always there when I need her. If I need help, she's always there, you know, to help me. So I don't know, maybe she was like Wonder Woman, but she was just always seemed to be available, and she was always so sweet, and she made learning fun. And that was just, I remember one of my favorite teachers in my favorite grades that year was third grade because of Miss Sheffield.
That's very nice. Thank you for sharing that. And I was worried there for a second that you were going to say, well, all of them are special. And I would say, no, you can't take that. I got to choose one, all right? And I appreciate you doing that. That's very nice. Well, I greatly appreciate you spending time with me today, Ms. Hare, and I thank you for what you do, and I enjoy you putting up with me coming into your class, because that's not always a lot of fun, having a visitor and then worried about what the kids are going to do next, but I greatly appreciate you putting up with that, as well as spending time with me today to talk about the best practices. You have the kids engaged, and it looks like you really enjoy what you're doing, and it's very obvious from the excitement in your voice and what you share with us. So I just want to say thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me, and you're welcome to come back anytime, but next time I might put you to work.
All right, yes. Thank you for the invite, and I'll take you up on it. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, you've been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, and I want to challenge you to think about some of the practices that you heard today, from the routines, the classroom management activities and practices, just the concept of practicing these routines and so forth, as well as the instructional practices in the room and what it takes to actually make formative assessment work for you. You need to be able to follow up and put those, create charts and so forth that allow you to keep track of information and just working with the kids to help them do better. And also remember that awesome advice of be flexible. So thank you for listening. Have an awesome afternoon.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.